Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi, guys.
Hi, everyone.
This is our special bonus and
you're getting like double doses of us this week.
I know.
I hope you're not sick of it.
And this is basically because we had so much stuff we wanted to talk about with Susan Cox Powell.
Yeah, it's an incredible. And I don't mean incredible in like a good way. I just mean it's like there's so many.
Yeah.
So many missing pieces and so many moving parts to it.
And so many great experts that kind of worked on the show that we were able to talk to.
Definitely.
So this episode features a conversation with Stephanie Bauer, who is an investigative journalist who was part of the show, The Disappearance of Susan Cox Powell. She has great insight from being on the ground making the show. You'll see her in the show. She's incredible, and we loved having her in.
We did. And the second part of the episode is a conversation with Buddy Day, who is the executive producer of the show. The conversation is incredibly interesting because he gives some behind the scenes thoughts about what it was like getting the evidence that the police never touched, you know, the tapes.
Yeah.
He also talks about how he was able to get certain people to talk, including Alina, mm-hmm. we mentioned in Saturday's episode. And she's probably the most interesting person still living in the Powell family.
Yeah,
and she,
I agree.
You know, staunchly defends her father. And so it was a big get for us.
Yeah. So without further ado, we hope you enjoy these very special and interesting bonus interviews. Check them out now. And we'll be back at the end of this episode. Hey, everybody.
Hi, guys.
We are here with Stephanie Bauer. Hi, Stephanie.
So nice to see you in person.
It's really great to meet you guys
nice
in
to meet
person.
You.
I'm such a fan of the show, so I'm really excited
thanks.
To be here.
I probably watched The Disappearance of Susan Cox Powell.
I know.
I don't know, four times, and you were just like that calm, like that good DNA, that thread that just wove the story so nicely for us. And as tragic as the case was, like, you did such an amazing job on it. And
thank
such good work.
You so much, because I've known about this case for so many years now, and I've watched all the shows on it. And then when they approached me to do the show, I said, "This is perfect for me.
Yeah.
I know a lot about it, and I just feel so connected to it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a case unlike any other that I've covered." Where so many people know about it, so many people have
yeah.
an opinion, and it's just in its entirety, it's the saddest,
yeah.
most horrible case you could think of.
And we'll never know 100% sure, too, right? Like, that's
yeah.
the thing that's so tragic about this. We'll never get all the answers, no matter what.
I think you're right. We'll
yeah.
never get 100% of the answers. We can get a lot, but...
Yeah.
Right. We can make assumptions. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
I wanted to ask you about your background because you're an investigative journalist. So I guess my question.
Say that again, Jack.
Investigative journalist. Yes. My question is, you know, you, I'm assuming, have worked on several other, maybe not similar cases, but you've done a lot of, you know, professional investigations, I
yeah.
guess you could say. How did this case sort of differentiate itself from things you may have worked on in the past?
This one really was different because although it's still considered an open case, it's unsolved, a body's still missing, we can make a lot of assumptions and really think what we know happened. And I think
mm-hmm.
across the country, from law enforcement to the detectives working on the case, to the family, to Susan's friends, we all kind of pretty much know what we think happened and
right.
who is responsible. Where in other cases I've covered, if there's a missing person, you really don't know what happened. We could see an Elizabeth Smart case.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Something like that. And there was a lot of similarities in this story to that, which posed a problem for the investigators. But I think with this one was so different because we really can say, well, we know who is responsible.
Right.
We know why Susan is no longer with us. There's
yeah.
a reason for it. And that made it easier in a way to cover because we got a lot of information from the investigators and the detectives that we wouldn't normally get on an open case because everything's so protected.
Right.
When I did the Crystal Rogers story, I mean, we weren't really allowed to have a lot of stuff because it's still an open, very active investigation. This one, we're coming up on the 10-year anniversary of her going missing, and we could just get so much more information. It was easy for me, and it just felt so much better. I felt like I was really getting a lot of information. I could really look inside the case.
When you were investigating and sort of retelling the story for the disappearance of Susan Cox Powell, what was the biggest surprise to you, and what did you really, like, learn from it?
Like I said, I'd watched a lot of shows on this before, and I'd known a lot about it. I had no idea how bad Stephen's obsession was. No idea.
The footage we saw.
Until I saw the footage.
Yeah.
And I was given
Stephen being Josh's dad, of course.
Exactly. Yes.
Stephen Powell, Josh's dad.
Her father-in-law.
Her father-in-law, who was obsessed with her. I knew he had an infatuation, and he liked her and was even thought he was in love with her and had this very sick obsession. I had no clue until I saw these videos. And even on the show, we can't air a lot of it.
Yeah.
Right.
The stuff, even we thought we could black things out or blur things out and maybe get away with it. It's so sick and so disturbing. And to really watch it in its entirety, which we were given the actual tapes to watch beginning to end, not edited at all. And you would sit down and spend hours with this.
Yeah.
And that was just the
morbid, right?
Morbid,
disgusting.
The
yeah.
worst. You can't even imagine it until you get, I mean, we were holding the actual tapes with his handwriting on them, just hours
That's
of
creepy.
Obsession.
You know, I was thinking about this when I was first watching it, you know, because it's so, it's obsession is like the lightest term. It's a, you know, the lightest term we can say, but like, what do you think? Him taping it, keeping all of this as like his own personal like trophies and collections, was that part of his like psychosis of being obsessed with her? Because for me, I'm like, why would you keep all that stuff?
Yeah.
Like,
let me tell you guys this too. Stephen, he recorded everything in his life very in an odd way. I mean, he would set up a video camera in his bathroom and record himself taking his clothes off, brushing his teeth, fixing his hair. He had this very weird obsession with recording himself, and it has to be his ego or something like that. So his infatuation with Susan really just mirrored that.
Oh,
just
right.
Filming everything.
Yeah.
But he would do these really odd and creepy things where he would dress up pillows like her.
Oh, yeah.
We saw some laundry machine stuff that we weren't happy with.
The laundry. He would act out this one particular interaction he had with her where he was sort of giving her a foot massage and then it turned into a back massage. I mean, he acted out this.
So disgusting.
He reenacted this so many times. And what was really interesting to see was to read his journals in sort of in line with the videos, because we had all his journals, all his videos, and I could watch them. Here's him writing in his journal talking about what he was doing with the pillows and everything. And then you could see him
doing it.
He would just take this one moment in time, maybe a 30-minute period, and then talk about it for months and reenact it on his bed for months. I hate to say he was in love with her because it makes it a happy
romantic
thing.
Right, it almost seems it's like normal.
It's not romantic. Like,
it's psychotic.
He's definitely in love and psychotic.
Yeah.
I mean, definitely. This is such a weird thing, and I'm not empathizing with him in any way, but it does, when you see this kind of behavior in any type of person, the mental illness is like so very clear that it's almost like, could he have changed his life if he was like, you know, if this was addressed early on and like people knew these sort of warning flags? And it's like, it's so tragic to know that it just sort of snowballed into the story that we all know and are talking about today. It's like disturbing.
To read his journals was kind of sad.
Yeah.
You kind of feel bad for him because he was so in love and obsessed, infatuated with this woman that he could never have. I mean, it's his son's wife.
Right.
And she's so much younger. But he was just, I mean, he could, to the point where it was debilitating. He couldn't even function in life. He couldn't think about anything
else.
He couldn't do
it's
anything
like
else. It
trash.
Was rather sad. What was interesting towards the end of our investigation and our time with the Coxes, I spent a full day with Chuck and their family, private investigator, and we were able to look at Steve and his wife Terry's divorce records, which were so eye-opening. And
in what way?
Tell us about that.
When they were fighting over, you know, custody of the children or what was wrong with the family or what was wrong with the kids, we got to see Josh's journal entries, Michael, John's. They were all highly disturbed in like a sexual way.
I saw
sexual pictures that the kids drew when they were very young. I mean, women being abused in sexual situations. But we only got to see that through the divorce papers.
Right.
And so the Coxes really pointed out, if we had ever known about these papers and had access to them, their public record, you can go get them. When Susan first started dating Josh, we might know the sickness in his family. And I believe it was all really hypersexual.
Yeah.
And I think if Susan knew, if she had only been able to see those divorce papers in some
she
way,
could have won a different way.
She could have known that this was not a good situation
scenario.
She was getting herself into. And the private investigator really pointed that out. She said, you know, if you ever want to check out your boyfriend, I can investigate.
Oh, we say that on the show
all
the time.
Of course. I try and get him checked out
all
the time.
Yeah, we're making sure
I mean,
we're checking each other over here.
Yeah.
You know?
You could just see the sickness in this family.
Do we get a sense, though, that Susan, because we sort of see in, at least what I've seen from Oxygen, right? I obviously haven't dived in as much as you have, that she's aware that her father-in-law's obsession is... Mm-hmm. fucking creepy to be light about it.
Mm-hmm.
But do we get the sense that she's like complaining to Josh about it ever? Like, do we get the sense that she's going on verbal record saying like, hey, what the hell is this? What's going on?
She did a little bit. She did. And Josh sort of just brushed it off. He never really took it seriously because you're so right. That's the first thing that people say is, well, why wouldn't she just tell her husband, dude, your dad's obsessed with me and it makes me really uncomfortable. She didn't really, and you got to think how she felt. She was very young. She was a young wife.
Right.
And you just want to, you have this desire to please, especially the male figures in your family, your father-in-law. You never want to rock the boat. You never want to make anything uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So she was nice to Stephen. Even when he's filming or putting on her makeup, she's trying to be nice to him. You just don't want to make things uncomfortable. And I think that that's what it was. She was telling Josh. And when she lived with Steve Powell is when she felt extremely uncomfortable. And she didn't even know she was being videotaped in the extent that she was. I mean, imagine if she had known. And so that's when she said, we're getting out of here. We're moving to Salt Lake City. We have to get out of here. So I think that's when she really put her foot down and made them move out of the house. That's when she told Josh, your dad likes me, because he tried to kiss her. And that was like the breaking point.
I mean, this all just goes back to full circle in a sense here to our conversation is we know, or at least we pretty much know what happened or who was responsible. But I guess my question is to you as someone who is so embedded in this case is what do you think the motive was in her death? Because for all intents and purposes, it seemed as if Josh loved her and obviously Steve to a larger degree.
Right. But there wasn't infidelity. Well, at least to our knowledge, there didn't seem to be any infidelity or she seemed like a very good wife and mother. And
that is the big question. It's like, why did he... If he killed her, why did he kill her?
Right.
Why? What was the reason? You guys are exactly right. So what we really discovered in at the end of the show is we give our definitive theory on what we think happened to Susan Cox Powell. It was, she was planning to leave him. I do think she had the video that she kept in her locked deposit box and she was making preparations to leave him. And she wrote in her journal, which I read, that if they weren't better by their anniversary, which I believe was in April, that she was officially and definitely going to leave him. And she did not want to divorce him. She wanted to have a family and be a good wife and mother. This is not what she wanted at all. And I don't want to say their relationship was abusive to where she would show up to work with a black eye or things like that, but what we really get into in the show is in Utah, the domestic abuse with women, it's very keep your woman down, it's, I can't even say Mormon, but it's just the way of life there in Utah is be submissive, be...
It's a cultural religious value probably there.
It is
inherent.
It's a form of domestic violence.
Yeah.
She was 100% the victim of domestic violence. As for the motive for her murder or getting rid of her, we think that Steve had a lot more influence than we originally thought before going into the show.
The show, I think, does such a great job at explaining that. And it sounds like even in ways that you weren't aware of before you started on the show, you know? So disturbing.
You know, this case is kind of rare, at least what we've covered here on Martinis and Murder, because everyone kind of can theorize what happened. I don't think there's anyone in this room who was going to think differently of what, you know, what the conclusion was. But it's still an open investigation. And so what do you think, like, the biggest misstep in the investigation was? Like, why isn't this an open and shut case outside of the body? Like, why can't we say this? We know so much, yet nothing's closed.
I think now... When this first happened, Ellis Maxwell, the lead detective, he said, I know Josh did it. I just can't prove it.
Right.
There's no body. And the first thing everyone says is, well, you don't need a body. And you're right, you don't. But you need some sort of foul play, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Some blood somewhere.
Just going to say that. What about the blood by the couch?
Exactly. So there is blood by the couch. And when they went into the house, there were fans blowing on a freshly cleaned couch. And that's a huge flag.
It's
okay, well, why is your couch damp?
Something bad happened here. And so there was the thought that when he gave her the pancakes the day that she went missing, maybe he possibly poisoned them just to make her kind of less mobile.
Oh, right.
And then choked her, and she leaned over and spit out blood when he was choking her. Mm. There is just no smoking gun, and there's no body. And here's where I mentioned Elizabeth Smart. Elizabeth Smart went missing in the same area. She was gone about 9 months. Everyone thought something horrible to her, and it happened, and then she appeared again.
Right.
That's the thing. If Susan walked back into the house,
to the world,
you can't. There was no proof that anything actually bad happened to her. But the biggest misstep and the worst thing about this case is the detectives thought they had more time. They thought they had more time to prove Josh did it and get him.
Right.
They had no idea he was going to do what he was going to do.
Right.
No
that's
idea.
True.
And that's the worst thing about it. I think eventually they could have gotten him, but they just didn't do it in time.
Do you think there's any chance at all that Susan is still alive?
No.
Like in your gut now?
In my gut, I think that she is not alive. But in my gut also, I feel like her body will definitely be found.
I was going to ask you that.
In other cases I've covered, I think...
What makes you think that?
Here's why. If he went camping and took her body out and did something with it, it had to have been very fast. The kids were there with him.
Right.
I mean, it had to have been something quick. A mine, something like that. I don't think he was...
Spending a lot of time.
I don't think he planned it out.
Yeah.
And I think he...
That's true.
It was a rush,
and I think it will just turn up. The other cases I've covered, I thought, oh no, they did a good job. I mean, this person's never going to be found.
Right.
And I think detectives think the same thing because they've told me. They think she will be found. Her body will be found.
Yeah, I know there's like thousands of mines probably to go through, and it's hard to say, you know, which one it is. I think the thing that really like crushed my soul outside of the entire case just being tragic was when Braden and Charles were talking about how daddy hurt mommy and like quoted as saying that, like it just like it crushed me. And the fact that they're not alive anymore to at least help in any way.
Right.
Is there anything that you think the public can do to sort of, I don't know, expedite this investigation or help in any way?
Well, they are doing new searches because of our show. I believe a lot of attention is coming out. So they are going out and searching those mines.
Amazing.
I think really the lesson for our show is so that this doesn't happen again.
Right.
That's what the public can do.
For sure.
Don't let this happen again. There were so many warning signs along the way that Susan could have been helped and saved, and nobody did anything. And even Chuck says, God, is there anything more I could have done? And he says, no, there just isn't.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for us, it's let's just not let this happen again. This can't happen again. As for helping find Susan's body, I mean, I think a search will turn up her body. I think it could happen.
That's an interesting point because I think, you know, Bravo and Oxygen, I work at both places, and we did Dirty John, you know, which was a massive, massive story. And I think as heroic but also kind of tragic as it was, it taught a lot of women, especially, you know, about red flags and what to look out for. This feels like the same
kind of thing,
right? Like, pay attention. I mean, she was paying attention. I think if Susan had more time too, she would have obviously, you know, left him in divorce. Maybe this whole thing could have been averted. But I think this is a really good lesson, especially for women, to watch all these red flags and know that you have options.
I feel like a completely changed woman from covering this case.
Wow.
More than any case I've ever covered in my life and probably will ever cover. And the reason why is because of those videotapes.
Yeah.
I got to watch them all. We'll air them on TV so other women can see them.
Yeah.
The journal entries. But really watching those videos, I mean, I'm getting goosebumps and chills right now thinking about it. The saddest thing is that we would have never even known that he was this obsessed in following her and filming her every move if she hadn't have gone missing. And that's really sad to me. She didn't even know this was happening to her.
Wow, that's a really good point.
She didn't know she was being abused in this way. I mean, Steven's standing from me to you filming her, and she didn't even know it. He's sticking a mirror under the bathroom door. Every move she made, he was filming. He's collecting her fingernails. He's collecting her piece of hair. He's collecting her used tampons and dating them and putting them in Ziploc bags.
Yeah,
we would have never known any of this had his house not been raided
and
she had gone missing. And that's the the saddest part. She didn't know she was being abused, and that's why as women we have to be careful. After this case, be paranoid.
Mm-hmm.
Be paranoid. It could be your father-in-law. It could be anyone.
A neighbor, whatever.
A neighbor,
yeah,
100% totally. Anyone. I'm curious if you talked to Josh's sister.
We did.
How is her mindset with all of this? Does she think she knows what happened? Like, would she be in this room agreeing with us, with our hunches of what happened?
Heck no. Okay. Alina has completely put up a fight and given us a completely, like, a counter narrative of everything we think mm-hmm. we know. Alina has a different story.
Wow.
So I'll tell you guys, the act of getting her to talk to us took months and months and months. She's never talked to anyone before. Before we even got her interview, the detective said to us, we wish we could find Alina. She's in major hiding. Mm. It took us a long time to find
sure.
her. It took us a long time to convince us to talk to her. And when we did, it was very top secret operation. And
yeah.
up until the minute we put our microphone on her, we didn't know if she was still
even
going to
talk.
Oh, yeah.
yeah.
Mm. And so we actually met with her and, you know, like a sort of secret location and kept it very private and really let her talk when she wanted to. But I mean, we put the microphone on quick.
Yeah,
we
sure.
Yeah, like,
because we thought, I mean, after months, she could still back down.
Sure.
So she is the only person left. She's the only one that can tell us what happened because she was with Josh, Susan, and Steve before and after Susan went missing. I'm sad for her because I do think her father ran that family like a cult.
Yeah.
He had warped all of their brains, and I do think he had a love for them. But if you speak to Jennifer Graves, the other sister
yeah.
that we kind of yeah. say got out of the family, like she's the only one that escaped, literally
yeah.
like cult like example.
Right.
She's the only one that escaped. She's the only one that says, you know, he didn't love us. He used us as tools, but I think he warped that entire family, all those children, and it's
yeah.
really, really sad. But I think Alina will protect Steve until the day she dies.
Yeah.
And she says, you know, the investigators were out to get our family and to make us look evil from the beginning. And I get that, and I do feel bad when
I
that happens
to families.
I kind
of did
too.
Yeah.
I get that.
Yeah.
You think that that's what investigators are doing to your family, but when you look at all the evidence, everything we have,
right?
I mean, you can't ignore it.
Right.
But Jennifer and Alina, do they have a relationship?
When
no?
we interviewed Jennifer, she broke down, sobbing, crying,
wow.
had to stop the interview, rushed away from the cameras, got up from her seat when we talked about Alina because she's so sad.
Mm.
Cannot
wow.
stop crying when she talks about Alina because she does love her
it's
sister.
Her little
but they,
sister,
they,
yeah.
they don't have a relationship. No, they don't speak. But she got really, really emotional when talking about Alina. And Jennifer Graves and Stephen Powell's ex-wife, the
mm-hmm.
mother of that entire family,
yeah.
right.
they still talk.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, they have a relationship, Jennifer okay. Graves and the mother do. But Alina,
wow.
no. I don't even think Jennifer knows where Alina is. Again, Alina is in
right.
super hiding.
Right.
Super, super, super hiding.
So it'll be interesting when both
wow.
Alina and Jennifer watch the show and they're mm-hmm. both in the episodes, you know?
I could talk to Stephanie all day.
I know, I
have
really
like 40
could.
40 million
I,
questions.
We have a whole bunch of questions here, but there's only so much time.
Yeah.
Here.
Thank you so much. This was like...
Thank
yes,
you guys
thank
for having
you.
Us on. This show is... It really will be incredible because
yes.
it will be the first time the entire world is going to
yeah.
get to see the depth of his obsession, how bad Susan's relationship with Josh really was, and like the devastating final moments and years of her life. It's a tragedy. It's sad. It's sad that her life ended, and it's even sadder the way it ended, the years leading up to it. I don't even think she knew what she was in, and it's just sad.
Yeah. Well, you also yeah. do such a great job in the show,
oh,
so congratulations.
The DNA
to you.
That combines
yeah.
it all, and
thank you.
You did such an
it's
amazing job.
It's an honor
job.
To do the show for Susan.
Hopefully
yeah.
Alina will watch it, and maybe, you know, come
yeah.
to light on some things. Maybe
listen,
not.
Or maybe anybody in that area that may
yeah.
know something. Like, if you're listening,
get the word out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that I like they say, someone always knows something that they heard
yep.
in a bar, sitting behind them in
yes.
the booth.
Amen.
Exactly.
And Josh had made comment really quick lastly.
Yeah.
Josh had made comments about if I ever was going to get rid of a body, I'd
oh.
throw it into mine. I wouldn't be surprised if he had made a comment to someone again, and they just haven't thought of it yet.
Right.
Wow.
You know,
right.
Wow.
Like
well, Stephanie, thank you for joining
thank
us.
You. Thank you so much.
And
this was great.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you guys. Thank you. It was a pleasure to be here.
Hi, everyone.
Hey, guys. Well, Darren, we are here with another expert in the field of true crime.
I've probably never been more excited to talk to someone. Certainly more excited than I am to talk to Matt every day.
Well, that's
obvious.
That
goes without
Thank
saying.
You for bringing that up.
Yeah, you're
yeah.
welcome. You're welcome.
We're here with Buddy Day, the executive producer of The Disappearance of Susan Cox Powell. Hi, Buddy.
Hey, guys.
How's
that's
it going?
Quite the introduction.
Okay, good. We compare you to Matt. We compare
yeah.
everyone to Matt and just know most people, if not all, all win. Matt's usually the loser on the show.
I'm so here, just... by the way.
Oh, no.
I'm listening.
I didn't want to give him a mic.
No.
Did you hear? I was like, too many voices.
Literally right before she was like, are you sure? I don't know. Okay, here you go.
He insisted.
Fine. Yeah.
We have so many questions to get through. John, why don't you just start this off?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for coming in today.
Sure.
Yeah, thank you.
I think the first question is, what made you interested in this case? I mean, Darren and I have taken this on the road, if you will. We've done a couple of live shows around the Susan Cox Powell case. We recently spoke to both Susan's parents and Stephanie Bauer, who is in the special. Mm-hmm. So you, as someone who's sort of behind the scenes telling the story, not necessarily sort of living it or investigating it, what got you interested in wanting to make something like this?
Well, I think on its face, it's just, you know, you're always looking at, as a filmmaker, as a director, as a showrunner, you're always looking for a case that has incredible twists and turns. And this one's it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's such a great twisty, turny crime story with layers and reveals, and you think it's going this way and it ends up going the other way. And so just on its face, just as a story, it's great. But then, you know, making it, we all were really aware that we didn't just want to retell the story of Susan Cox Powell, you know, because it's 10 years, it's been told.
It's been told, right.
They did a great podcast about it. So we really wanted to find another level, find a story that no one else saw, and tell like a bigger, broader, deeper story that would really resonate with people.
Had you heard about Susan Cox Powell sort of before coming onto the project?
Yeah, I mean, when I first came on the project, I'd heard of it. I didn't know a ton about it, you know, other than she went missing, you know, there's something about an exploding house or something, you know. The basics. And then as soon as I got on involved, I read the books. There's a couple of books about it.
Of course.
Started digging into it. And then what was just so fascinating about it was, you know, every time you'd learn one thing, it'd lead to something else and something else and something else.
Right.
And then you'd have more questions. And why didn't they do this? Why didn't the police do this? Why didn't the police do that? And then we just kind of vowed to get this incredible access that we got. So,
did you come in? Sorry, John. Did you come in with any preconceived notions about who had done it? And then did that change as you're sort of learning about the case?
100%. I mean, you know, you watch this, and that was actually something we talked about a lot in making The Disappearance of Susan Cox Powell, where, you know, you read Wikipedia about Susan Cox Powell, you read a news article, you watch anything about her, and the thing that you come away with is, oh, her husband killed her.
Right? Oh,
like,
it's Josh.
Like, oh, it was Josh. So we were like, well, you know, how are we going to, knowing that Josh most likely killed her, you know, what more is there to this story? And then when we dug into it, we found out, oh, there's a ton more.
Totally,
You know, and in fact, the reason she was killed, the why she was killed, like the motive behind her murder became the most fascinating part, because men kill their wives all the time. It's, you know, if a woman dies in the United States from a homicide, their partner, their male partner, is by far the most likely person that's going to kill her. So the fact that a young mother in Utah got killed by her husband is not on its face an incredibly interesting story.
Right.
But when you dig into it and you see the layers to it, and you see how her religion played a role and how her family played a role and how all these people in her life played a role and the dynamics of the Powell family and the police and all this other stuff, then it becomes an incredibly interesting story.
I've never been happier to be gayer right now than this right here.
Statistically,
I feel like I'm safe. Yeah.
Well, you just talked about the why.
Right.
Yeah. Knowing what you know now, what is your sort of, when you lay your head down at night, what is your sort of motive, do you think?
Oh, well, I mean,
assuming it's Josh, by the way.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, and that was actually a thing, too. And I mean, when we did a first version, when we were earlier on in the edit, we were kind of like, holding the idea that, you know, we're kind of trying to keep it open, like who killed Susan. And I remember working with our production executives at Oxygen, who are fantastic. They were like, you know what, we know Josh killed Susan, so let's just say that early on in the show.
Interesting.
And then so we did, right? So I think early on in the show, it's just like, you know, the police officers and everybody that works at cases kind of like, yeah, we know Josh killed Susan.
Right, I remember that.
Everybody knows. So what else is there? So the why became so much more interesting, right? So
Gina's coming in. She's going to provide drinks for us today.
Don't you worry, buddy. Yeah. Don't you worry.
You're going to tell us everything now. Thanks.
You know, no, keep going.
Yeah. But do you want me to tell you the why?
Like, I think I'm interested in what you think the motive would be.
Oh, 100%.
As somebody who's so involved in it.
Yeah, I mean, well, in my opinion, I think the why really I mean, it's a complicated story, but it really comes down to her relationship with her father-in-law. So as you know, like, her father-in-law was incredibly obsessed with her.
Let's just say a creepy motherfucker.
Yeah. But like,
that's one way to put it.
That's my way.
The level of obsession that Steve had for Susan is hard to fathom until you watch all the videotapes. Uh-huh. So we got all the raw videotapes.
And we've seen some of
them
ourselves.
Matt can personally attest to watching hours?
I did watch it for 3 days.
Oh my God.
I watched all of it.
I was sitting in
the gruesome shit.
I was sitting in the West, not West Valley State. I was sitting in Pierce County Sheriff's Office, just going through these boxes of videotapes, and they would be like,
and this is the raw evidence.
The raw evidence, like it was literally an evidence bag with a sticker on it that said evidence, and we cut it open and dug our in a paper bag and took it out.
How did you get access to that? Because that was not previously seen before by people outside of authorities, right?
So we had a team. So the team at Texas Crew. So it was made by Texas, the production company that made Susan Cox Powell's Texas Crew production. So the Texas Crew team, we submitted all these FOIA requests, and we initially got a small batch of stuff that everybody gets. And then we just started digging through it line by line, like, you know, because they had thousands and thousands of pieces of evidence. So we started digging through it line by line. And what we found out is that the evidence in the Susan Cox Powell case is not well organized. So it's not a lack of them not wanting to give you the evidence. They don't really know what they have. Exactly. So we literally would dig through hundreds of pieces of evidence, hundreds of photos, spreadsheets of documents, and find pictures. And I remember finding me and the associate producer Michelle found a picture of a tomato crate box with videotapes in it, and then it had the evidence number on it, and sending it off to their legal and saying, you have this box somewhere in a shed, we want to cop it. And they did. It took them like a month, and they found it. And then we, Michelle flew to West Valley City, and then we had to go to a pawn shop and buy like high eight player so we could watch the tapes and record them onto a digital device.
Get like Betamax
and,
or something.
Like, we had to do all that kind of stuff. And you know, I remember sitting in Pierce County Sheriff's Office and, you know, going through with the detective, going through the evidence, and him giving me CDs and saying, like, I'm not even sure what's on here. Like, you know.
Have fun.
Yeah. Right. And we'd load it up, and the one was like Steve's porn, like his personal porn collection.
Oh my God. That's the stuff Matt really looked for. Trust me.
Matt was checking that out.
You know, it was like, it was bizarre. You know, it was just, and the more you look into it, you know, just the more bizarre Steve is, and you know, all these journal entries and stuff. So, you know, going back to
the motive, sorry.
Yeah, the motive is like, he was obsessed with Susan, and his level of obsession, like, you know, he would take he would take her clothes and then he would dress pillows up.
We saw
like
that video.
And then he would masturbate to them for a long time and videotape that. Then he would play that back and masturbate to himself, masturbating to these clothes.
Oh, wow.
And then he'd diarize about it. And then he'd actually I got to hold the actual tapes, his actual tapes.
Hopefully with gloves, by the way.
Tainted evidence.
On the tapes he would document, he'd be like, good ejac to Susan. Like, you know, he would like document like,
this is what men do. Yeah. This is what Steven does. Yeah, I need to know.
Clear.
Let's
be clear.
I need to know now.
Is that really abnormal?
Yeah. Matt's like, what do you mean? I've got a couple of those. That's cool.
Yeah. And so in his own handwriting, he'd like document like what kind of orgasm he had and like, this is a good shot of, you know, and all this stuff on the tapes. Like, so And he, if you read his journals, he thought that one day Susan would like see all this, and she just like think
flattered.
This is romantic, you know, like that, you know, that it's great that he kept my tampons in a Ziploc bag and in a locked drawer in his room, like, you know, great. Like,
so I was going to ask, he did this romantically?
Yeah, like I think he really felt like
the tides would turn.
Yeah,
or something.
Like his obsession was he didn't see it as an obsession. Interesting. Yeah. Alina, who's in the documentary, didn't see it as an obsession.
His youngest daughter. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember in the interview with her saying, you know, he was obsessed, and she said, no. I mean, you know, I wouldn't say he was obsessed, and I would say, well, you know, he had her you know, her used tampons in a drawer in his bedroom. I would call that obsessed.
Yeah.
I would say that's the level of martinis and murder obsession. Yeah. I think we would agree with that.
But to get to the motive, so you're saying, sorry, I know this is a long winded thing.
This is very long winded. Yeah.
I know, but I just want to say, I mean, is it, do you think the motive was that Josh was doing this because he was scared his dad would get to her?
No, I think Steve thought that he would do all this stuff and then Susan would one day she'd come around.
Oh, I see. You know? So you're saying that's part of
and one day she'd be like, she'd realize how flattering all this attention was, you know, even as bizarre and crazy as that sounds. So Steven actually and recorded, which is in the documentary, he recorded himself confronting Susan and saying, Susan, you know, I love you and you're leading me on. And he also, there was a huge part of Steve that thought Susan knew about all this.
Right.
Even things that there's no way she could know about. He was convinced that she knew about. He felt like she would, one day she'd come around, right? And so in order for that to happen, Josh and Susan had to get a divorce, right? Mm. So Steve was pushing Josh to get a divorce. He was pushing him and pushing him and pushing him to get this divorce, right? So they would spend hours and hours and hours on the phone. And Steve would encourage Josh to rant and rave about Susan, and he'd feed into all this stuff. All the while, Steve's writing in his journal how much he loves Susan. And once they get divorced, he'll take Josh's place and he'll become the stepfather. And that'll be cool because, you know, that'll solve all the problems and all this stuff. So Steve is pushing and pushing and pushing for Josh to get a divorce from Susan. And I think, in my opinion, Steve just pushed too far. You know, he thought Josh would just divorce Susan, they would be done with it, then Steve would come in, take over. Yeah. But instead, he didn't realize how sick Josh was. And Josh, instead of getting a divorce and having to pay child support, having to do all these things, Josh just was pushed to the point where he just killed her.
Do you think it's a thing where Steven's like, you have to get rid of her, Josh, you have to get rid of her, and Josh interpreted it as
100%, exactly. I think Steven was pushing and pushing, saying, you gotta get out of this, you gotta get rid of Susan, you gotta get divorced, thinking they'll get divorced and me and Susan can be together. But Josh took it in another direction. Josh committed murder.
I mean, obviously we don't know, right? Because it's still disappearance of, so we're not 100% confident, I guess, that any murder took place. I think we can make hunches.
Yeah.
And what I'm fascinated about was that, did Josh know about his father's obsession with Susan? Like, I'm thinking when you're saying motive, Josh is like, I gotta keep her away. Like, if I can't have her, no one's gonna fucking have her. You know what I mean? As opposed to it being like, I'm misinterpreting what my father is saying.
I don't think Josh really had that if I can't have her mentality. I think it was more just like a rage scenario that,
right,
you know, but yeah, he knew that his father was one thing that was interesting was when Susan died, Steve wrote in his journal extensively that he thought Josh had murdered her. He wrote this as clear as day, he writes pages about it saying Josh killed her. And you know, there's some inference and questions as to where he was getting his information, because he was writing things very specific. Like, I think, you know, Steve would write, I think Josh may have taken her to, you know, a place in Nevada and cremated the body, maybe. Like, and you're kind of like, well, why is he writing?
That's specific.
Yeah, that's pretty specific.
Throw a maybe at the end.
Yeah, you know, so you wonder if they had conversations, but we don't know.
Yeah.
But he was very convinced that Josh had killed Susan. And then he kind of flipped for some unknown reason and decided that Josh didn't kill Susan and he was going to defend him to the death, kind of thing. And in doing that, he kind of denied and denied and denied that he was even obsessed with her. And then years later, when Steve went on this media tour and his journals were seized by police and it came to light that he did have this obsession with Susan, Josh felt very betrayed. Everyone in their family said Josh felt very betrayed because Josh actually believed his dad that he didn't have an obsession with Susan. So,
of course.
So I think Steve was just very, very manipulative all the way around.
No wonder Josh was sick.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah.
Definitely. Well, we sort of get that impression from Jennifer Graves, right? We sort of get that from her, that she's like, she wasn't part of this, I don't want to say cult, but like this control that Stephen clearly had over the family.
Jennifer, of course, being the oldest daughter.
Sorry, yes. Listening. Jennifer was the oldest daughter, yes.
I mean, in my opinion, I think Steve is clearly a sociopath. So,
yeah.
I mean, and I mean, so what does being raised by a sociopath do to someone? You know, and that goes back to the Powell family. I mean, and you can read, there's hundreds of pages of divorce documents about the Powell family and you know, all the allegations and even going, like, Steve writes in his journal about being sexually attracted to his daughters, and right. Steve, you know, writes about, like, all this, you know, crazy stuff.
Normal.
I mean, all
yeah.
this very abnormal stuff,
thanks,
right?
Gina.
And then you go into this, the Powell family history and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, what does it do to someone to be raised by a sociopath?
Right.
I mean, in the documentary, Jennifer talks about, you know, being 10 years old and her dad, they're in a motel room, and all of a sudden her dad just starts watching pornography in front of her, like, as if
that's
it's
going to fuck you up.
Not a big deal. I mean, what does that do to someone? So you think about Josh. I mean,
thanks, Gina.
How does being raised by Stephen Powell, like, knowing all that Stephen Powell is capable of, like, what does that do to a person? Obviously, Josh is not a normal, well-adjusted person, right?
Do you think, just before we continue, just capitalizing on what you said, do you think Susan is 100% dead?
In my opinion, yeah, there's no question.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, she left the house in the middle of the night with no purse, no keys, left her kids behind, and was never seen or heard from again. I mean... There's nothing in Susan's life or character that would suggest that
she would do something.
She would do something
right.
like that,
well,
you know?
Wasn't she a swinger who ran off with
Stephen Kocher?
Some men that she met?
You're actually referencing basically what Stephen and Josh, like, had said about.
Yeah.
They had spread these rumors about Susan being very promiscuous and sort of.
In the years after her
in
death.
In the years after.
They started spreading these. They kind of launched this whole counter narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. About Susan.
So I heard, and help me clarify this story, that you guys were, the production team for the show, were on your way to maybe interview Steve or do something with Steve and found out that he died.
Yeah, oh they. I wasn't there, but yeah, the production team, led by Brad, who is the chief creative for Texas Crew, he was on a plane with
one of the
executive producers, Shelley Ross, and they were literally getting on a plane to go to
Washington,
yeah, to try and interview Stephen before he died.
Oh my goodness!
And he died. Like, I think I believe he told me he got like a email or something as he's sitting on the plane to go there.
What was your reaction when you found out that he died? Because, you know, if I'm the Powell family and you're looking at potential people who are alive that may know something, and now Stephen dies,
it's heartbreaking.
It's like. I'm right, exactly. Like, if you're the Powell family, it's like, on one hand, you're maybe probably glad that this guy is no longer around, but then it's like, he could have been that last potential hope.
The missing link, if
you
will.
You know, I don't... Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if that was my daughter, I would feel that way.
Sure.
Yeah.
Looking at it, and this is completely my opinion, I don't think he knew, like, where Susan's body was or some bombshell piece of evidence that would really change anything.
You don't think Josh would have confided in him?
No, and the reason I don't think that is because I believe that Stephen was pushing them to get a divorce. I mean, we know that.
Mm-hmm.
We know that because Stephen wrote that. And I believe that that was the catalyst for Josh to murder Susan. And after that, I think it was, you can't forget that Stephen loved Susan. So after Josh murdered her, I think it was so psychologically damaging for Steve to admit to himself that he had caused Susan's murder that he decided that Josh hadn't murdered Susan.
Interesting.
You know?
Right.
So I don't think, like, he wanted Josh to have murdered Susan. And I think all his siblings didn't want their father to be responsible for Susan's murder. So I think the Powell family really, one of the reasons they really rallied around Josh was not to protect Josh, but to protect Steve. Because the Powell family wasn't fiercely loyal to Josh. They were fiercely loyal to Steve.
Yeah.
Right.
Right?
He ran shit.
Yeah. And they didn't want Steve to come to the realization that he had caused Susan's death because that would have destroyed Steve.
Right.
You know, Steve loved Susan. So,
true love.
Yeah.
Do you think there is anyone alive right now who knows exactly what happened to Susan Cox Powell and knows where her body is?
I mean,
she's dead.
I don't think so.
No sibling.
I mean, the only person that would know is Alina.
Right.
Who we...
I was just going to bring
her
up.
Who we tracked down and
that must have been hard.
That was tough. Yeah. We from the outset, we set out to track down Alina. We tried working with the Cox Family private investigator. She told us blankly, she said, you know, we're not having any luck finding her. I tracked down a bunch of phone numbers for Alina, and I was just texting them, just seeing what's, you know, I didn't even know if that was her.
Yeah, right.
And I was coming home from for a weekend. We were filming, we'd broken for a week. I came home for a week, and I was standing, getting my baggage at the baggage claim, and I got this text, and it said, how did you find me, and what do you want? And I said...
My heart just dropped.
Yeah, I said to myself, who is this?
New phone, who dis?
Yeah, right, exactly. And I'm like, who is this person? And it was like, and I said, oh my God, this is Alina. And then I started texting Alina, and then I just said, you know, like, talk to me for 2 minutes and, you know, hear what I have to say.
Right.
And she said no. And,
no shit.
And
yeah,
so
right.
We started texting back and forth. That went on for, I would say a couple of weeks, like texting, lot of texting
on a daily basis.
After that, we started talking on the phone and literally spent hours and hours on the phone, like 30, 40 hours on the phone, like just talking and talking and talking and talking and talking and just trying to convince her that we would let her tell side of the story.
Of course.
'Cause she was really worried that she would become on and made to look like, you know, a fool, like that we'd bring her on and make her look crazy. And I remember I was on the phone with her, with one of our executive producers, David, and he said to her, Alina, we don't need your help to make you look crazy. Like, we can do that without you.
Right. This is your chance to redeem that narrative.
Yeah, we want you to tell your side of the story.
Right.
You know, the other side of the story. Mm-hmm.
Smart.
And then she did. And it was touch and go to the point where we were working towards getting an interview. We were pretty much done. And she agreed to it. I got on a plane that day. I was, me and the crew were in Washington a few hours later, met her the next morning, and spent the entire day with her. I was literally just spending the day with her, like running errands, like we were going grocery shopping.
Yeah, Steph Bauer had said that you guys were just like doing normal people, like coupley things together to like build a relationship. Yeah. And she wanted to trust, you need that trust.
Yeah, trust was a big issue for her. John was there, John Powell, who's Alina's brother, was there. Alina, you know, she didn't want to just jump into an interview. She said, well, I got to do some errands. Will you come with me? I said, sure. I walked out of the hotel and right by Steph, and Steph said, where are you going? I said, I'm going to go grab a smoothie and do some shopping with Alina.
Yeah.
We went in and we got in her van and I recognized it. And I said, is this Steve's van?
Oh my God.
And she goes, yeah, this is my dad's van. It was like the van from the videos.
Oh my God.
We need that van. Yeah,
like the van from the videos where he's filming Susan. What? Like it's like, I was like, oh my God. And we drove around the Tacoma and went to Whole Foods and
that's amazing.
Wow.
We should talk about the drink right now.
Oh, yeah. We have a ritual that before we start.
And Gina should actually mention what the drink is.
They have lovely ice cubes.
A rather subversive tie to the case.
Thanks, Gina.
It was all Gina's idea.
Yes, and not Matt's idea.
Okay, yeah. Say that loud and clear into the mic.
This is a pancake-inspired cocktail.
Oh, God.
Watch the episode if you really want to know what that's about.
So it's a maple syrup old-fashioned with some blueberries in it. Ooh. And I will leave the whiskey for Matt, and I will leave some maple syrup for John if he wants
thanks
to.
Thanks,
sweetie. She wants to taste it on the show.
I like sugary things.
It looks beautiful. It's got lovely big ice cubes, Gina. Yes. So, I mean, nice dissolve. We cheers, bitch,
thank
right
you,
before
cheers,
we start.
Cheers, bitch. This is our thing, buddy. Welcome. Cheers. You're thank initiated
you
to the
thank
show.
You.
As you guys take a sip, I actually have an interesting question for you. Because I've mentioned a couple times, and we're big, we have to obviously say it for legal reasons, that like this case is still really unsolved, and no one was tried and prosecuted for the potential death of Susan Cox Powell. So I'm curious for you, because it feels like we know most of the answers, even though legally we technically don't. What do you think has been the biggest misstep in the investigation with the police that kind of Why haven't we solved this fucking case yet?
Well, the first biggest misstep was the night Susan disappeared. So the night Susan disappeared, the West Valley City Police Department did not take her disappearance very seriously. They thought she would just come back. So
is that common? Do people just come back?
I think it was a combination of they were overwhelmed with cases.
Yeah.
They obviously, and I'm sure you guys have seen this, but I've done a lot of cases of national interest. And, you know, you see this with like the Casey Anthony case or like the Jodi Arias case where then, you know, these investigators get asked these questions over and over and again. The day of the event when they got involved, they didn't think it was a big deal. It was just another day.
You know. They don't know what a Casey Anthony's going to be, right? Yeah. Like anyone could be.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So, you know, when Ellis Maxwell got the case, he went to the house, he looked around, he brought in Josh, he talked to him, and then he said, then he let him go home and said, come back tomorrow morning.
Then Josh drove 800 miles.
Yeah,
and all that. Just got a new car. And,
you know, just casual things like that.
I mean, Ellis Maxwell told us, you know, the biggest mistake I made was letting Josh go home that night, not searching. They didn't even search the house. They just walked around and looked.
Right. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, so Josh went home. He cleaned everything up. He destroyed evidence. We know he destroyed evidence. He hid stuff because they found it later, but he destroyed it.
There were fans on a damp couch.
He dried the couch. He, you know, he cleaned up all the blood, if there was any. You know, he got rid of all the evidence. So, you know, that was the biggest misstep, you know. I think, you know, it's a bit I said this to the DA when we met him, and I think it's controversial, but I think race played a role in it. Like, if Josh was a young black man, I think they would have just locked him up and he would have confessed, you know.
Sad but true reality.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, he was a middle-class white guy from the suburbs.
Pious and religious.
Right. Exactly. And when you watch that initial investigation, he puts on this whole aw shucks routine that they totally bought. They didn't realize that he was being disingenuous, you know, and he said the right thing, so they let him go. So, you know, that was the biggest misstep right there.
Yeah.
And then once it snowballed into this huge case, then they were very overwhelmed.
Right, and they tried to backtrack and
tried
fill
to backtrack.
In.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to ask, because when you were talking about the evidence and all of the evidence that they had stored, because we've done some cases where the police only had like 20 pieces of evidence on file because the county doesn't have the budget.
I was just going to ask him a question about that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, just what are your thoughts about the way police handle investigations? Like, one of the things I feel like, and sorry, Matt, feel free to jump in wherever you want, but one of the things we have discovered, I think, on this show with all the cases and the experts we've talked to is that not every police department has the same bandwidth to fully cover every case. Do you think that that was a scenario
here? Oh, yeah. I mean, one thing, so I've had the unique opportunity to meet, you know, last year I probably met like 20 or 30 lead investigators for different cases, right?
Yeah.
Just from doing this. And one thing I think you forget about police officers is like lead investigators are not like Sherlock Holmes, right? Like,
totally.
Like they are blue collar guys who went to college and were more ambitious than some of the other blue collar B cops and made their way up the chain, right? And so they're good, well-intentioned, hardworking guys, men and women, mostly men, but men and women, and they have they don't have enough money. They don't get paid what they should be paid.
Right.
They don't have the resources that they should get, and they have to solve these cases really quickly.
They're
right?
Limited,
and they're limited in what they can do. Right, like, mm-hmm. But you know, they're not like, you know, Stephen Hawking level intelligence. I mean, few people are, but they're not like, you know, out there like Murder on the Orient Express putting all these things together. Yeah. They're doing the best they can.
Well, yeah, and the other thing too is like, you know, when you were talking about the evidence at the beginning of the show here, like looking through the big bags that they hadn't touched yet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's such a great example, and Darren, I'm sure you agree with me, of why media is changing the outcome of these true crime investigations, because here you come along with Texas Crew and all the resources that you guys thankfully have and are digging through, you know, all of this stuff that it seems like this police department didn't even, or it wasn't that they didn't get to it, it's that they couldn't, right?
Yeah, it's like they couldn't. Like, you know, I probably spend, when I do a case like this, I probably spend more time looking through evidence and stuff than some of the investigators do.
Yeah.
Because they have a whole caseload. Like, I'm just doing this one case for like 6 months.
And people to help you along the way.
And I got
a
whole team of people to help me. So,
And just like piggybacking off of that, do you think, you know, there's a bunch of theories out there of where Susan's body is. And, you know, some people think that he like drove out of Nevada and like threw it in kind of a mine shaft kind of thing. Do you hope that there are just like these armchair detectives out there who are just going to go kind of searching for it and seeing if that happens?
I would love nothing more than to find Susan's body, if just for her family, because we spent a lot of time with Chuck and Judy,
man.
And they were phenomenal.
They're superheroes.
Yeah, exactly.
Chuck toured us, you know, took us around, gave us so much time, and he a great man. And you know, I don't think that her body is in some, you know, mysterious mine or something. So the mine thing comes from, Josh was at a party before Susan disappeared, and he made an offhanded comment to someone and said, oh, you know, if I was going to kill someone, I'd put her in a mine. Like, you know, it was something like that. We don't know if he was drunk or, you know, the context of it.
And
then months and months later into the investigation, that person and a couple people told investigators, hey, I was at this party and I heard him say that, right? And so that's where the mind thing comes from.
Right.
You know, so that's, to
that
me,
could
that's
be circumstantial.
It's weak, right? I honestly think, because we spent a lot of time driving around. We retraced his route with Steph and did all that kind of stuff. And when you get out there, it's this huge expanse. And the day he allegedly killed Susan, he's, you know, it's a snowstorm. He's got his kids. He's got limited amount of time. I think it's most likely that he just drove out somewhere that he was kind of familiar with, dumped her body by the side of the road or in a bush or something, and he kind of got lucky, you know?
Because there's no evidence of, like, shovels or dirt or mud or anything like that.
Yeah, and he had all that, like, the camping gear, but when they took the camping gear out of the car, it was all pristine, right? It was all clean. So I don't think... For my money, like, I don't think there's this big conspiracy, like her body's in this super secret Indiana Jones type burial chamber. Like, I honestly think he just dumped it somewhere. He got lucky. And then one day a hiker will be walking and find a jawbone. And that'll
be happenstance.
Yeah. And unfortunately, I mean, look at, you know, Casey Anthony. I mean, her daughter was 100 feet behind her house.
True.
It took them 6 months to find her.
And
the entire
point.
Orlando area was looking for it. Like,
it does beg the question, which obviously is moot at this point because they're dead, but what the kids, Brady and Charlie, might have known. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, if they grew up, obviously they were very young when this happened, but, you know, they've gone on, we know through the records, they've said daddy hurt mommy and this and that and the camping trip.
Yeah, well,
like,
yeah, that's really interesting. So what they did say, the day they interviewed Charlie, they said, did you go camping? He said, yes. He said, who went with you? He said, it was me, my brother, my mom, and my dad. And they said, where's your mom? And he said, she stayed there. She didn't come home with us. I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah, right.
That's what he said. And they said, well, where is she? And he said, we went out to where the crystals are, and she stayed there where the crystals and the flowers are. Actually, in Susan's safety deposit box, and we didn't put this in the documentary just because it was a little too inside baseball, but in Susan's safety deposit box, she was typing up sections of her journal. And one of the things she typed up was this kind of first-person narrative of a weekend camping trip that they had gone on. And it is verbatim what Charlie and Josh told police.
I was wondering this too.
Yeah. And it's like, we went to the Pony Express Trail and we saw geodes, which is crystals in rocks.
Right.
And they were red and
they were flowers.
And Josh made us pancakes before we left. And it was great, although he never cooks.
Mm.
It was like verbatim Josh's alibi. So what that tells us is that, you know, this week, the camping trip that Josh told police and told everybody, that really happened. It just took place months before.
Right.
So when he's telling police what happened, he's telling them about this camping trip that Susan, not realizing that Susan had documented it.
Right.
You know, and that's what Charlie was telling police. So I suspect that when they're coming back, Josh is saying to Charlie and Braden, like, okay, don't forget, we went camping and we found the geodes and we went
planting
to Dinosaur
those.
National Park and
right.
we had pancakes and we had all this. And they're like, oh yeah, because they're four.
I was just gonna say,
yeah,
it's horrible.
I mean, as tragic as it is, I definitely was wondering if Josh was coming to some sort of realization that the kids might start remembering things at their
age.
Yeah,
a lot of people have said that. I mean, we don't know. Right?
Yeah, one will ever know. Sadly.
Yeah, we don't know. You know, they were saying, you know, I think the kids were getting more as they were getting older. They were getting more difficult to care for Josh.
Mm. Yeah.
I think that was a big thing for him.
Like on his own.
Yeah, they were getting kind of wild. Their house really had no rules. They were getting difficult to handle. He wasn't a very good father.
I was just going to say, he's probably not very present after all of this.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of factors into it. But ultimately, he was just a really selfish, self-involved person.
Well, I guess as we start to wrap up this conversation, and thank you again for coming in
today.
Yeah,
this is amazing.
If people have tips, if people may have heard something, what are some ways that people that may have some sort of connection to this can sort of, I don't know, anonymously or even not anonymously, give it their information over? Because, I mean, ultimately, right, I think we all hope that some justice here. And I think that's what I was sort of pointing to here with the media changing the landscape of these investigations. So.
I think in terms of justice, you know, you can always call the West Valley City Police Department or the Pierce County Sheriff's Office. You know, I don't know how much justice there is left other than finding her body, which would just give her family peace of mind.
Yeah.
But, you know, who knows? And that is, I was going to say, that is why they turned over all that evidence to us. That is why they work with us. That's why they were participated in the special is because they're hoping something generates something, you know, just talking about it. But secondly, I think, you know, the biggest takeaway for me from Susan's story is her kind of whole history and story of domestic abuse and just kind of waking up to the idea that, you know, we shouldn't treat women this way. And so I think if someone watches the special and recognizes themselves in Susan's story, I hope they call the National Domestic Violence Hotline. So I think that's the biggest takeaway.
Amen
great.
To that.
Yeah.
One last question before we let you go. Is there anyone that worked on this series that comes away with any different opinion of what happened to Susan Cox Powell from yours or Stephanie Bowers?
I think we all did, right? I think we all went in thinking, oh, this is just an open and shut abusive husband who killed his wife.
End of story.
And I think when you dig into it, you realize, oh no, it's this intergenerational abuse. It's this obsession. It's her culture. It's, you know, it's all these things making this awful perfect storm. So for sure.
Well, buddy, I mean,
thank you for coming.
Thank you so much and answering our questions. We just hope justice for Chuck and Judy and the rest of the Cox family for sure.
And the disappearance of Susan Cox Powell is on Oxygen Saturday, May 4th and Sunday, May 5th at 7/6 Central. But you can also watch it on demand if you're listening to this episode after.
Watch it.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
All right. Well, we hope you guys enjoyed these conversations.
Yes.
I mean, it's kind of rare that we have these incredible people on the ground who can say everything, especially for a case that happened recently. And we were lucky to get all of them in the studio. And so we hope that clarified some questions or maybe opened up some possibilities to all of you out there.
Yeah. And if for some reason you're listening to this episode and not our episode that we released yesterday, listen to that full episode because we had an interview with Chuck and Judy Cox as well. So lots of interviews, lots of information about the Susan Cox Powell case. And once again, check out the disappearance of Susan Cox Powell on demand and on the Oxygen Now app or anywhere you stream TV.
We'll be back next week with another shot.
Yay. Bye.
Bye.